Thank you very much. So I really hope things will be legible. I didn't quite anticipate the scale of this room, so well, I decided to use a blackboard. I'll try and write big. So I'm going to give, I think my talk's going to be mostly pretty basic, and I hope comprehensible to the students. So I want to talk about something I've been thinking about recently, about kind of twists of supergravity analogous to topological twists of supersymmetric field theories that people might be familiar with. So I'll start by reminding you of something basic. So what's it? Supersymmetric field theory, say on Rn, something everybody probably knows, has fermionic symmetries. Which live in some spin representation of spin n. And these satisfy some equations and some anti-commutation relations. So for example, if you view these fermionic symmetries as acting on the Hilbert space of a theory, the anti-commutator of your fermionic symmetries would be, you know, momentum or energy. So this following, there's been a great deal of activity in the, you know, high energy physics for a very, very long time, maybe since, you know, the late 80s, based on the following idea, Mr. Witten. If we choose a fermionic symmetry Q, such that it squares to zero, so typically it will square to some translation, then computing Q invariant quantities is very easy. For example, so how easy, of course, depends on what Q you choose. So for example, if you choose a nice Q, with a nice Q, this implies that correlators of Q invariant operators are independent of position. So this is what we can call a topological twist. So for example, the OPE is zero. So there's no singular terms in the OPE. Things are much simpler. And generally what happens, not always, but very often, Feynman diagrams of loop number greater than one just don't contribute. It's kind of Q invariant calculations. This, of course, the difficulties people have with computing things in quantum field theory is that, you know, there's all these infinite number of Feynman diagrams are very hard to compute. But if you just look at Q invariant things, normally you only compute things to one loop, instanton corrections, and then you have the whole answer. This gives rise to many exact calculations. So this procedure is known under a rubric of twisting of field theories. One way you might like to term this general idea. So you could say that the twisted field theory has operators the Q invariant operators of the original theory but in fact you also have to divided by operators of the form like Q times O. Given any operator, you can produce a new one by applying Q. And the twisted theory, what you do is you take the invariant ones and you divide by the ones which are obtained from Q. Why is this the good thing to do? I won't dwell on this point. Because Q is a symmetry. If you know, you can think about Stokes' theorem or something like that, or it tells you the expectation value of Q of any operator equals zero, just because if we assume it's a symmetry of the quantum theory, this must preserve the functional measure. And let me briefly mention one very famous example of this procedure, which was investigated by Witten and later Cyberg from Microsoft. So for example, if we can compute the partition function of supersymmetric Young-Mills in four dimensions. So of course nobody knows how to compute the partition function of non-supersymmetric Young-Mills. But this can be expressed entirely in terms of differential geometry. There's no perturbation theory, really. There's no Feynman diagrams, no ultraviolet divergences anymore. It's entirely some simple differential geometry. You count the number of Young-Mills instantons. So in mathematics, this procedure of counting Young-Mills instantons was introduced by Donaldson. This is great. So this method is incredibly powerful. But what I want to talk about is how to do this for supergravity. And we'll see that there are some nice things that come out of the supergravity version of this story. So what I want to talk about is, firstly, twisted supergravity. Then maybe I'll explain a little bit. The really great thing, at least to my view, about twisted supergravity is the following. So everybody knows, you know, the famous problem that Einstein's gravity is not normalizable. So it's not possible to construct the quantum theory because there are infinitely many ambiguities coming from the infinitely many possible counterterms. But in many cases, twisted supergravity can be quantized using standard techniques. So the famous difficulties so that the infamous difficulties about non-normalizability of gravity go away, and you can also, a project I'm working on now is ADS CFT or gauge gravity duality in this setting. Okay. So I need to tell you. So crazy. Are things legible to people? Yes, this is. System works. That's great. You know, I always have trouble talking to physicists. My background is in pure math, and I'm really into things like homological algebra and algebraic geometry and category theory and stuff like this. So there's always an issue of language. What's it?
You're doing great.
That's good. But maybe you might not say this once I talk about ghosts. So again, another thing people might probably are very familiar with is that if I consider Ordinary-Young Nodes theory, the field is a connection, right, as a one-form null four, valued in your Lie algebra. G might be SUN or something like that. But there's a redundancy in description. If I take my connection to, say, let's DA, where X is some map from R4 to my group, this transformation, call this, say, A sub X, then A and A sub X are physically indistinguishable. Basic stuff. So, you know, there's a redundancy in our description of our space of fields. Really, our space of fields is not this big space. It's what my position is called, the quotient, where I identify my A and my AX for any X. So, Fadeev Popov had this great idea. How do we understand, you know, we want to do a functional integral over this space. But there's this huge redundancy. So how will we do this? So Fadeev Popov said, we can deal with the redundancy by introducing ghosts. So what are ghosts? I can give you a kind of heuristic definition, but yeah, of course, I really want to introduce much more homological things, but I will restrain myself from talking about the BV formalism. So the heuristic idea of what's going on is we have a fermionic field, which is the ghost field. Chi, bad name probably. Corresponding to infinitesimal gauge symmetries. So the idea is if we do a functional integral, over the field both A and chi, well, this cancels the redundancy in the description of A. So might ask why I went off on this apparent tangent. Well, ghosts will be necessary to talk about twisted supergravity. My time. I have 45 minutes, is that right? Intuiting questions. Okay, so like 40 minutes left. Okay. So in ordinary gravity, kind of Einstein and Hilbert, I always like to stick up for Hilbert at this stage, as a mathematician, says that the fields, gravity, are kind of G, the metric tensor, but there is also, as before, there's a redundancy given by changes of coordinates. So when one wants to, if one imagines trying to do the path interval, we would have to not consider a functional interval of the space of metrics, but there's also this redundancy by changes of coordinates. So we should introduce ghosts. Which are fermionic fields, which live in vector fields on Rn. Okay. I actually believe possibly Feynman wrote a paper about introducing ghosts for doing gravity in the 60s. Now, supergravity is similar. Now, I don't know much about supergravity. I cannot probably write down, you know, all the supersymmetry transformations or whatever. They're very complicated. But the basic thing we need to understand for this talk is very simple. So the basic fields we have are G, a metric tensor, and there might be a bunch of other stuff depending on what theory we're considering. Maybe plus some other fields, which include the gravitino. So the gravitino, I think of this as a one-form valley in the spin bubble. So it's a spinner-valued one-form. And just like ordinary gravity, there's a redundancy. We can do changes of coordinates, as before, but also some kind of super change of coordinates. What does this mean? Supergravity has this remarkable feature called local supersymmetry. Which means that part of the redundancy is not just a vector field. We have a fermionic, we call it a gauge symmetry, if you like. Q, which depends on space-time, depending on, it's really a field. And we think of it as a spinner. The smooth function on Rn values as the spinners. So whereas before, for ordinary gravity, gauge symmetry was just a vector field, where for gauge theory, the gauge symmetry was a map to my group, my gauge group. For supergravity, the gauge symmetry is a vector field, it's infinitesimally, it generates a change of coordinates. But also, there's a fermionic gauge symmetry given by the spinner. OK. So a minute ago we said, well, Fedeev, Popov, Feynman, and so on said that if we want to get rid of this redundancy, we should introduce fermionic fields corresponding to the gauge symmetries. But those were ordinary bosonic gauge symmetries. We should also expect, if we had a fermionic gauge symmetry, we introduce a bosonic ghost. So, ghost for supergravity. Include there's fermionic ghosts, which is vector fields in Rn, and also bosonic, which is some spinner. So when one treats supergravity in this way, one has this extra kind of bizarre bosonic field. So now I can tell you what supergravity is. Twisted supergravity, it's very simple. It's simply supergravity in this supergravity is equal to supergravity in a background with a non-zero bosonic ghost. So we can think of this as something probably familiar to many people. In gauge theory, you can think about the Higgs branch or Coulomb branch of vacua. And in the Higgs branch, some of your matter fields have it's a vacuum, so we tell that they're at infinity, they have a non-zero value. In the Coulomb branch, your gauge field might have some non-zero value at infinity. So really, what we're doing is selecting a vacuum of supergravity, where the theory becomes much simpler. So the principle is so general that one can always talk about twisted supergravity. However, of course, the features, what twisted supergravity looks like, of course, will depend very much. It applies to all of them, yes. In dimensions bigger than one, dimensions bigger than two, because, as I'll explain in a second, there's equations of motion. So the equations of motion of twisted supergravity . So let's assume that our ghost, that the non-zero fields, are the metric G and Q bosonic ghost. Then the equations of motion are that this spinner is covariant constant, or this refers to the Levi-Civita connection. And secondly, E squared equals zero. It might happen that if you take n equals one supergravity in two dimensions, you can never satisfy this condition, but in bigger dimensions, you can always do so. So let's give you a brief example of what's going on here. Maybe for n equals one supergravity in four dimensions. N equals one supergravity in 40. Well, of course, I should specify these are the equations of motion. There's also the Einstein equation for G. But as we'll see, condition one implies condition two, as we'll see in this example. So what happens in this case? Well, it's equal to zero. Well, this implies that the holonomy of the metric fixes Q. Well, if you think about a spinner in four dimensions, what matrices will fix a given spinner? That's going to be SU2, at least in Euclidean signature. In particular, it's automatically Ricci flat. This is all, again, very basic. So it's kind of a drawing, picture of like something like what you might imagine to be vacua of n equals 1 supergravity in 4D, where a vacuum is we specify how things behave at infinity. There's some big space of Ricci flat manifolds. And at some special points, they're not only Ricci flat, but they have SU2 holonomy. This condition of having SU2 holonomy is equivalent to the Enkeleviev. When our metric has SU2 holonomy, there's another vacuum branch of the moduli vacuum that can break off. This is where the bosonic goes to non-zero. So, as you can see, this is a direct analog, Higgs and Coulomb branches of engaged theories. You know, in the Higgs branch, if my matter field has some special symmetries, then some of the Coulomb branch breaks off. So I want to finish by, I suppose, how long do I have left? 10 minutes. Perfect. Thank you. This is a pretty basic talk, but I haven't really got to the punchline yet. So I'll get to the punchline in the next 10 minutes. So, for example, we take n equals 2 supergravity in 4 dimensions. This has a Donaldson twist. So in this twist, perturbation theory only extends to one loop. Just like we saw with gauge theory, and the partition function should be some kind of count of what people call gravitational inceptance. Which are the same as manifolds with SU2 holonomy. Why do I call it the Donaldson twist? Well, it has a feature that if I couple to gauge theory in this background is the twist introduced by Donaldson, actually put in the supergravity background. So now we see that the problems encountered long ago have disappeared. Not only can we define it at the quantum level, we have the answers in that differential geometry. There's no difficulties with Feynman diagrams at all. No, it's not. There's a definition, but we translated it into an easier problem. No, but people know quite a lot about these things. The space is disconnected, so you probably should say, well, what are there kind of fix some discrete invariants, like engage them, fix some instant number, put an analog with an angle. And then it should be number. So let me discuss the example I'm really interested in. And this example is only motivation for why everything should go away, although I haven't explained the details of why kind of complicated Feynman diagrammatics should disappear. The basic point is a bunch of fields become massive and can be integrated. So there really isn't much room left. A really interesting example of what I'm interested in is type 2b supergravity. In 10 dimensions. Well, we saw that twisted supergravity, the metric was satisfied right there. There are bosonic ghosts as a covariant constant, which implies it has SUN homology. So this is what's called Clavier. So it's natural to guess what twisted supergravity looks like is it's kind of a gravitational theory. On Clavier manifolds. Now, a long time ago, 1996, Rashadsky et al. Proposed just such a thing. Y manifolds, and we expect that the twist of type 2b just is this. How long am I hammering? There's a bunch of evidence for this, which I don't think I have time for, mainly involving ADS-C of T, which is a to get to a conjecture. But the twist of B supergravity is equal to this BCLV theory, where the B stands for Bruchowski. I mean, in principle, one can do this by writing down all the fields of supergravity and doing some crazy computations, but I find them too hard for me to do. So now, let me give you another example of why this is a good thing and why the difficulties with normalization should disappear. Following theorem, due to myself and my collaborator, C. Lee, this BCOV theory is naively non-normalizable. After all, it's a 10-dimensional supergravity theory. The scaling should automatically tell you it should not be normalizable in the naive sense. But even so, there exists a unique quantization which is compatible with a certain 10-dimensional gauge theory. So here we're in a situation where, familiar situation where it's non-normalizable. You might think there might be infinitely many counterterms and so on. But there's some kind of remarkable cancellation. Well, all of this is fixed because basically possible counterterms in the gravity is canceled with anomalies in the gauge theory. This is a cartoon and there's more to it than this. So if you want your gauge theory to be anomaly-free, you fix the counterterms you need. Okay. And so this is another example of 10-dimensional gravity where you can really, these ordinary perturbative techniques, fix the quantization uniquely, and you can have lots of fun by saying, you compactify four dimensions, am I done? Okay, I didn't see your slides. Okay, yeah, you can do alias CFT and various other fun things with this. I'll stop there, thank you.
From a physicist perspective, the LHC has not detected any supersymmetric particles. The LHC has not detected any supersymmetric particles so far.
And I'm a mathematician.
I think it's probably likely this will continue next year.
I understand. I mean,
the second comment I have is that supergravity was invented to make gravity renormalizable, and so far this has not been demonstrated to be the case.
Yes. No, it's not.
Okay, so you introduce a 10D gauge theory coupled to the supergravity?
Well, the 10D gauge theory is just the twist of maximally supersymmetric gauge theory in 10 dimensions, which you can write down as a particle level. So you can write down the coupled interaction between these two guys and try to quantize that coupled system.
Okay.
That's what quantizes uniquely.
Okay.
Then you can try to decouple them, but you can't decouple the gauge theory only about size.
So where does the homological algebra come in?
Well, in a bunch of places, in particular here, you kind of, there's some cohomology calculation going on here. These counter terms, the possible Lagrangians, kind of standard thing, you can compute. There's some cohomology group that tells you what they are. And similarly for the possible anomalies, there's also some cohomology group. And they're the same, some kind of baby case of ADSU.
Two questions. You just described this theory, which is naively not renormalizable, but somehow, I guess you say it in some sense does have a continuum limit or something anyway.
Well,
I don't know if you would go that far. But anyway, this is reminiscent a little of what people call asymptotic safety.
No, absolutely.
So is there some connection that you see?
No, it's exactly the same idea. I mean, asymptotic safety, and the problem with asymptotic safety is as you go further in the loop expansion, there's more ambiguity. But here the situation is better. So there's no ambiguity.
Why do you say there's more ambiguity? There's no ambiguity, yes.
There's no ambiguity.
No ambiguity,
as opposed
yes.
to what would you be
right. The other question is about, so you described the supergravity theory, which twisted, which in some sense is renormalizable,
mm-hmm.
Even though the original untwisted theory is not. But the way you described it, it sounds like it should have the same local, it's just a different background, but it should have the same local degrees of freedom. And
well,
what intuitive reason can there be why these local degrees of freedom?
Let me give you an example. Suppose we take a 5D gauge, 5D Young number, not renormalizable, but put it in the background where your gauge field is generic. Then it becomes an abelian theory.
Where the gauge field is what?
Is where put in a background with a non-zero gauge field.
Yes.
Diagonalizable with distinct eigenvalues. Then it becomes an abelian theory, which is renormalizable. So this phenomenon is very easily visible even in ordinary gauge fields.
But you said more, that you said it only had one loop or something like that.
In this example, no. This particular case is all loops.
No, the other one.
The other one. Well, you know, maybe that fits pretty well with a free theory only has zero loops, right? So if I take an ordinary gauge theory and some interesting background, it looks like a free theory. So
are you ignoring non-perturbative effects when you say this?
Yes, this is a mostly a perturbative story.
It just seems strange that the physics would change so dramatically from one background to another.
I'm not a physicist, it's my get out of jail free card for everything, right?
I have a question about the twisting. Could you give an idea of, I don't know, what somehow it would mean physically, what this twisting theory, what do they really represent? And also, another question is that somehow here, you know, when you twist the theory, you have more symmetry. Can you use this twisty theory to do some perturbation around it? That is, can you relax this twist, you know, is there a procedure? Can you use it as a very symmetric way and then look for deformation around it?
You mean like go back to the ordinary gravity back?
Or yeah, go above it, at least, you know, go back towards something else. Because if it's, you know, fully renormalizable, then it suggests another way to reorganize.
I think that's a great question. I have no idea what happens when you go back. And when you go back to the ordinary untwisted gravity theory, I presume bad things will happen. I don't understand that. But you can freely move. You can move around freely in the space of vacua, which have at least one non-zero bosonic ghost. So in that space, you can go anywhere. I really don't know what to say except the bosonic ghost. It seems crazy. I know, but maybe somebody who knows more about supergravity might have a better interpretation.
Any more question, perhaps from the students or postdocs? Then let's thank Kevin again.